In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, weekly show brought to you by Join Cycling. We've got our whole Cobble Classics or Spring Classics recap for the men and women's. Who were the winners and losers of the Cobble Classics? Some dodgy relegations and non-relegations that came out later in Paris-Roubaix. There's some crazy footage of the junior race, and there's also some police action, apparently, regarding some of the fans in those very classics as well. We've got injury updates from the unfortunate crashes in Dwars Dua and the Basque Country. Lenny Martinez, very strong rumor to Bahrain, as well as previews of some of the Ardennes classics that are beginning this week, including Brabant and Amstel Gold Race. But how you been, Benji?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for checking in. Yeah, pretty good. I can't complain.
You recovered from the Roubaix sportif?
I've recovered. I won't lie. The 2 days after, especially the second day after, really hit me. I was completely fucked yesterday. But today I feel pretty good. I'm ready to go back on the bike tomorrow morning and we're going to start training again. And that's the go-to plan there. But I don't know, I've got this feeling of like, I'm not sure I'm disappointed in the classics, but I'm kind of disappointed in the classic. That makes sense?
Yeah, I think it was not the best spring we've ever covered. that's why I love Milan-San Remo so much, because even though the same team still won it, it was a different rider on that team, and and many different riders could have won in the final 5 minutes. So it was very, very exciting. And but yeah, it just wasn't the best classics this year.
The issue is not that Van der Poel wins. Like, I love Van der Poel. I think I'm pretty clear about that. It's just that I don't like it being so obvious that someone's going to win and then not really having a feeling of like, ooh, that might actually not happen. That's kind of the vibe I've got. And that brings us to that first topic, right? We've got the topic of recapping the Cobble Classics here. And let's bring it back to the start first, because the start didn't actually surround Alpecin too much, because it was Vismalab that was conquering Omloop with Trotnik, that was conquering Kuhn, Russell Kuhn with Van Aert. And then it all kind of fell apart for Visma in the period that started the second wave of Cobble Classics, right? Because you've got likes of Gent Wevelgem, Dwars door Vlaanderen, they won with Jorgensen, but half their team got crippled. And it was already crashed in the races beforehand. Hagenis had already broken his nose, if I recall correctly. Trotnik had fallen in Gent Wevelgem.
Laporte and Van Baarle were too sick to do Gent Wevelgem already.
Exactly. So you've got an entire list of victims, basically, at Vismalab. And then you look at the other side, not Alpecin, but Little Trek, for example, who started this classic season, well, I don't know, absent, because Pedersen was not present in Omloop, not present in Kuurne. And I kind of still wish that would have happened, because he was really strong in February. Would have liked seeing him there, because that might have been a real competitor for those two classics. Because Van der Poel's not there, so it's a little track against Visma in that regard. That would have been really interesting. But then you're right, like, Gent Wevelgem happens. Yes, Pedersen wins. Yes, he does that quite strongly, but it's also a race that suits Pedersen more than the very hard hitter monuments, because it's slightly less altitude meters and so forth. So I don't know. They also get crippled. Stuyven falls out of Dwars door Vlaanderen. Pedersen crashes there as well.
Ish.
How much do you think Vismalab and Little Trek's crashes and injuries and so forth influenced the dominance of Alpecin in RVV and Roubaix?
Yeah, it makes a big difference. It doesn't mean that there's going to be a different winner. Alpecin were the best team, particularly in Roubaix. Like, they were the best team. And Van der Poel's the best classics rider in the world, Cobble Classics rider.
Yeah.
But maybe instead of a 60k solo in Paris-Roubaix, we see a 15k solo from Carrefour de l'Arbre like last year. maybe or from Monzon-Pavel or later from Van der Poel. Maybe in RVV, it's on the last Paterberg or on the last Alto Quarmont. So it's just because, yeah, Strada was 80K solo, RVV was a 45K solo, E3 45K solo, and Paris-Roubaix 60K solo. If Sturven and Van Aert are there, probably Van der Poel still wins, but the solos are not as long. I think is probably the difference. And yeah, Sturven also, like, he really, I feel bad for him too, because he looks so, so good. And in Roubaix, when he wasn't that good in previous years, he was still up there. And so this year, I really think Sturven could have been, him, Sturven and Milanderson crash and Pedersen, that would have been a super team in Roubaix as well. But yeah, the big winners are clearly Alpecin. They won the first three monuments. Like, there's not much more you can do. That was their big goal. They also double podiumed Roubaix again. And Van der Poel, and it was with two different riders, Philipsen and Van der Poel. So they are the huge winners. I saw some stuff about their budget recently. That seemed a bit off, like a bit low. Like, I don't think they're on 15 million, given that Van der Poel just had a 10-year extension.
Yeah, but it's also all this discussion about budget when it comes to teams. Reality is that the team of the budget isn't even the limit that they're at, because there are individual deals with bike sponsors that are connected to the team with riders. So, for example, Mathieu van der Poel has an individual deal with Canyon, most likely next to his own contract with the team. And you had that with Dumoulin back in the day with Visma, if I recall correctly, as well. You've got that in all the other teams as well. Pidcock has a deal with Pinarello, for example. So, I don't know. It's impossible to figure out what the budget of a team is. And that's also one of the topics that, like, continue, because they keep talking about salary caps, but how do you restrict someone from having individual deals with partners of the team next to the salary of the team?
I mean, you could try and find a way, I guess, but yeah, that's going to be difficult. but maybe you could, if you have like a sponsor of the team cannot have a direct contractual relationship with the rider, I guess. Could make it a rule like that. But then, yeah, these things are very difficult to enforce. And as you've seen in the Premier League with the financial fair play rules, take a long time, a lot of effort to enforce. But yeah, that's still, Alpecin are not a big budget team. And to win the first three monuments is a massive achievement. And also because, their team performed really, really well, particularly in RVV. Andrew Bay and Van der Poel keeps improving. So what do you think he can do in the Ardennes, Benji? Because what's he doing? Amstel and Liège?
I think he's doing Amstel and Liège, but also if you look at the entire season, we'll start with Amstel and Liège. Amstel, I think he can win. I think he starts as head favorite, actually, going into the race. I haven't gone through the start list one by one yet, but in my head, I can't think of many others that are starting that race where I'm like, oof. That's going to be a big competition for Van der Poel there either. Because it's also, Amstel, they are not Liège-Bastogne-Liège climbs. And Liège, it's longer climbs, longer efforts is how I see it. And his punchiness really still works on Amstel. And Pogacar is not at Amstel, while Pogacar is at LBL. So if you then look at LBL, he's starting. He's gotten sixth in 2020, I think. And yes, his ascending is a big skill that he can use. If you drop on the last climb, Rochefoucauld or Boncel, whatever the running climb is on top of Rochefoucauld, if you drop there, you might still be able to come back to a few people in the descent. But sorry, but Pogacar is Pogacar. Looking at LBL, I'm kind of thinking, okay, Pogacar is going to be pretty bloody strong. So anyway, we'll go into the details of previews of those races later. But I see Van der Poel being able to compete for Amstel while being able to compete for a top 10, maybe 5 at best at LBL?
Yeah, I think that's right, because LBL is a different race, steeper climbs, longer climbs on Rochefoucauld. And so it's with Poggy there and also other good punchers like, there's just generally like even someone like Van Hills or Healy or whoever, like on a 2K, 8%, 7% climb, it's a different story. Against Van der Poel. And yeah, in the Tour de France, he can do one big effort on them, but Liège is many, many, many efforts like that. So
was he doing the Giro or the Tour this year? Because I don't remember.
I would think the Tour.
I don't remember because it's not clear yet, but I guess we'll see eventually where he shows up. But obviously Olympics is going to be his next focus to get away. Worlds probably in Zurich as well, even though Olympics should on paper fit him as a parkour tour, right?
Olympics, yes, more than Worlds. Worlds is probably quite hard with Pogacar being the favorite there, but Olympics, punchy course, maybe technical around the north of Paris near Montmartre. I think
small
it's
teams.
Yeah, small teams. I would say he's much more likely to win Olympics than World Championships. I think Little Trek have to be very happy with not necessarily results, but like Pedersen, podium, Roubaix, they clearly took a massive step up.
Yeah.
Even though the results maybe, they still won a big classic on a Sunday, Gent-Wevelgem. Sturven looked way better. Kirsch was good. Schoens was way better. They have to be happy with their step up. Quick Step, it seemingly got even worse in the classics, if that was even possible. They were horrendous. UAE were also the big improvers with Pollitt, Morgado, Wellens, even Bjerg in the top 10 in Flanders. They were outstanding. Pollitt was the most consistent rider after Van der Poel in the whole of the Cobble Classic. So it goes to show that, like, Pollitt isn't performing better than he ever did at Bora, but he performed at the level we expected him to be at in the races. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, same thing with Yates. It's not like Pollitt is way better than what he has previously shown at times at Bora, but it's just that he's still the same guy to me, a strong ruler who can't sprint, who will never win a reduced group sprint against, as we saw in Roubaix, but he's just there now.
I agree, but I would add to that I would see his Roubaix result I expected. His RVV result was maybe slightly above what I would have seen in previous years. Because that one year when he did get that podium at Roubaix, he was doing so from a position where people might not have expected him to do so, thus might be more eager to ride with him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, maybe. That's also that RVV group is very strange, you got to say. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's also reflective of strength in the race. Like, no disrespect to Morgado and Mozzardo, but like Turns and Bettiol were much stronger, as well as some others.
Jorgensen, Pedersen were also very strong in those races, but it also shows that sometimes we always advocate for, we want to see your teams ride for the victory, you know? But sometimes the best result is when you don't ride for the victory, because let's say Pedersen and Jorgensen don't go all out to try and beat Van der Poel in RVV, they're probably going to end up with a top 10, top 5 position in that race. Which now they don't, because they threw it all on the table before the final hill zone, because they wanted to try and get ahead of Van der Poel to try and see whether he can actually beat him. And that's, I think, I don't know, is that a good or a bad sign? I don't know how to read into that.
Yeah, it seems like the hard races all suited Van der Poel this year, actually. they just made him win by 3 minutes. But yeah, Pollard and UAE were very, very, very good indeed in the classics. And so, yeah, Pithy was a revelation, but maybe Bora will be hoping that he can fill that gap in their classics. Mayus was okay as well at times in small sprints behind, but yeah, Visma as well. Like, it's kind of a lot of the same problems as last year. Benji crashed at the wrong time, sickness at the wrong time, punctures at the wrong time. Some is controllable, some isn't, but certainly. When Pedersen and Van der Poel didn't do opening weekend, so maybe, is there something in that? I don't know. It's not like these guys raced a million races beforehand, and I'm not a trainer, but like Laporte doing Kerner, how does that stop him puncturing in Sector 1 in Roubaix? You know, I don't see a correlation between those two.
I fully agree with that one, but it's also like Van der Poel limiting his races and focusing on the big races seems to work for him. For Wout van Aert and Pedersen, we can't necessarily say, okay, Pedersen skipping opening weekend and Wout van Aert skipping a lot of races in function RVV and Roubaix, then on one end, when they do crash out, it feels like they missed chances that they could have won. But on the other hand, if they don't risk it, they might never find out whether it would help or not. It's like, it's very difficult to look at it. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, because we don't have the answer because he didn't do Roubaix or RVV.
Yeah, he might have to do it again now.
Yeah, I think you should do Sanremo every year.
I think so too.
I think if there's a monument you can win and you'd be the best rider on your team for it, you should do it. And that's my simple way of looking at it.
Sanremo is also not the most crash-prone race to my memory of all the races that lead up towards the classics, in my opinion. So
it's also the best one for him.
Yeah, I agree. I fully agree. He's won it already, for example.
Yeah.
Won already a monument in MSR. We can't forget that, but he's obviously hunting for the others, of course. But what I do feel is that the fact that all these like outsiders and co-favorites or whatever you would call them crashed or were hindered or were impacted, it did show or display the strength of some of the younger riders that I might not have expected to do as well as they did. Like, for example, Mattis Mikkels getting 10th in Roubaix for me, like, I wouldn't have said that the week before, nor the day before, nor a year before. Like, I was seeing this guy as an okay classics type sprinter, is how I perceived him. The dude is still 20. Getting 10th in Roubaix is bloody great. Like,
just keep him off Instagram.
Facts. But it's also seeing the Van Dijke brothers then step up for Visma, for example. That's also something where I'm happy to have seen that, because now we know what their capabilities are in those races. And that's something we see across a lot of teams, Morgado. Like Malecki doing that well, Morgado doing that well. I like that aspect, though. If I have to choose one aspect of the
Quickstep didn't have that. Like, Quickstep had no bright, like, there's no 12th from a young guy to cling on to, unless I'm missing something, right?
But it's also, what races did the young guys that we expected to do these races do? Like, we look at Luke Lamperti, and he did 72nd in Gent-Wevelgem, but outside of that, he got 7 in Kuurne and didn't ride any of the big classics, you know? I'm looking at Paul Manier, for example, and he did Circuit des Ardennes, Dwars door Vlaanderen, where he honestly was 39th, so the opportunities that they did get, they didn't necessarily prove that they were at the level that you would hope for, but I also don't remember whether they had the actual opportunities in the races or whether they had to work for someone else in those.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get on to the women's recap, we'll mention our show partner, Join Cycling, for the weekly show. What's your next goal, Benji?
My next goal?
Done. Yeah.
Honestly, like, I went into Roubaix Sportif with 3 weeks of being sick, so I have no clue where my level is, so I'm probably in the next week going to try and find out where my current level is roughly, to then go into some kind of training plan. But I'm kind of having the issue of, my next plan was going to be climbing Ordino faster when I come to your place at the start of the Giro, but I think that might be short for a training plan. So I think that might just be an intermediate towards maybe doing it in July or something, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you do if you do like one of the 3 month plans, like the long stamina builder ones, there's still weeks in there where you can do like an all out test, you know, once a month.
That was low key what I was trying to look into. I think I'm going to do one of those longer 3 month plans. I'm probably going to go for the stamina builder, to be honest. And I'm going to try and build up towards July roughly, because then summer is out and then I can wear bib shorts and short shirts. And again, I do that already, even though it's fucking cold outside. But hey, that's my plan.
Okay, I'm doing the Fabio Jakobsen sprint plan, which is actually going pretty well. I saw after we did the Flandrian Challenge, or attempting to do it, I also came home and I was like, okay, I had no goal, and then like a week and a half off the bike. And so I like pretty quickly had to set some sort of goal. So yeah, mine as well is first week in August. I want to go and do a recon of Quitu Negru, the Vuelta, one of the Vuelta Asturian climbs, next to the Angleru. So I want to be in shape for that. So and that's not even a race or anything, but I just need something. And then obviously everyone then decided I'd do the Fabio Jakobsen sprint plan, which doesn't really help doing Rampas and Humanas. But
can we just talk about the fact that if you can do 1500 watts for 50 seconds, shouldn't Fabio Jakobsen be doing the Patrick Bro plan instead?
Exactly. We should join cycling should rename the plan after me. But yeah, I actually watched the videos with Jakobsen. They're in it's subtitled in English, actually, if you want to, because each week has like a sprint-specific workout once a week, and there's videos on Join YouTube channel showing with Fabio Jakobsen subtitled in English, explaining with Jim, the CEO, like the basis of the workouts or the methodology or science behind them, which I found interesting. But yeah, if you want to check out Join Cycling yourself, I'm in the midst of that plan and enjoying it. Just got off the trainer actually this afternoon. You can get 30 days free through the link down below, as well as 6 months discounted. A lot of you have now signed up for that as well. Yeah, I'm glad everyone's enjoying it. We've seen all the data, and it's fantastic to see so many people on board and enjoying and training before summer begins. So thanks, Join, for sponsoring the show. The Women's Benji Classics, I think, was very, very good this year, with Little Trek, in my opinion, were actually the strongest team, but they didn't send Elisa Longo Borghini to Roubaix. I still don't know why exactly, but when it was Van Anroy, Longo Borghini, Van Dijk, am I missing someone? Balsamo. I think that was the strongest team this year in the classics.
Probably. I agree with you, because like, even with SD Works, I felt like going across the races last year in RPV in Roubaix, we just had a clear Lotto Kopecky that was so much stronger than the rest. And the rest of the team was also very prominent in the second group then behind her. And that was present there, while the others didn't necessarily come even close to Kopecky. And throughout this classic season before Roubaix, I never had the feeling that Kopecky was dominant over anyone in the pack. It was always, she's in the same group as Longo Borghini, as Voss. Okay, Voss can beat her. Longo Borghini can beat her. She looks like she can't respond to that attack. On the Kopenbet, she doesn't look that great. There was always like something where I was like, I don't really have the confidence that Kopecky can clean this up. And it's only in Roubaix where she was really strong, but also it's not like she rode away from everybody.
No, she rode for the sprint.
Still a group sprint where she destroyed everybody in the group sprint. Let's be honest about that part.
She rode like a coward the last 15Ks.
No, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. It's right to ride like a coward if it increases your chances for victory.
No. I agree to a certain extent, but when Balsamo was off the back and she didn't ride even then, well, that made no sense.
I don't know. She won in the end, so maybe she needed the energy.
But I still, just to play advocate of the devil. But that's to your point. Yeah, I agree. Like she didn't ride away 60K solo. But SD Works obviously was still very, very good, but it was not the walkover that we might have feared. It was not the walkover we saw all through last year. It was much more balanced. And indeed, in the Tour of Flanders, Little Trek were the best team easily the week before the Paris-Roubaix. But then in Canvegelhem, Vibus won, and SD Works were very, very good. Brugge de Panne, Balsamo, Trofea Binda, Balsamo.
Yeah.
Strade Bianca, Kopecky, and then Voss won Omloop. But where she was much stronger than Kopecky and Little Trek, but Little Trek as a team were very good there, third and fourth.
It's interesting because I do feel like on the SD Works side of Wiebes was very strong this year. As in Omloop, she wasn't the level I expected her at all. But then throughout the rest of the classic season, like Henry Avelhem, like we worked up to Henry Avelhem being a race where Wiebes could win over the last 2 years. And she was gradually getting more versatile to the point that she got over Camelback in the first 3-4 riders this time around and was looking very strong. And she was looking very strong in RVV as well and in all those races and in Roubaix up to a certain point as well. And Wiebes just keeps making small moves forward, I feel like, to the point that her sprint might not have gone faster. But I do feel like when it comes to the sprint this year, she's again with a margin the best sprinter, while last year Cole was closer. Charlotte Cole this year hasn't really enticed me to believe that she's the one that is going to destroy Wiebes half of the time this year, because the times that they were sprinting, Balsamo was arguably more consistent in being competitive against Wiebes this year for me. And I don't know, that also means that Wiebes is dominating sprints. It's good to see Balsamo back when it comes to the sprints, though, because that is something towards the front sun that I'm looking forward to. I don't know if she's riding the the what's it called, the Giro Girodon, because she's Italian, so legally she should be able
to
forced to ride that. But it's also I just like seeing sprint competition, and I feel like the sprint competition has gotten better on the second row, but further away from Weavers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Balsamo, she looked back to her 2022 self and 2021 self. Last year was a bit of a down year, where she really wasn't so. Which she didn't win until. Okay, she won two stages of Valenciana, and then she had a bit of a drought until September. She didn't win for like 7 months. Ride London Classic DNF, and then she was out. And then the tour, was probably a little bit underdone.
Yeah, it was a pretty heavy injury, and that's why she didn't come back kicking in those months. So that drought was there, but she's kicking back now, and I'm happy to see it. But next to SD Works and Little Trek, is it weird that I feel like I don't remember much from like outsiders? As in like Nivea Dona, for example, Hill Classics are coming, but in the Cobble Classics.
Voss was much, much better than the previous 2 years.
Yeah, of course. You're right.
But it's weird to call her an outsider.
Exactly.
The two cyclocrosses were Buck Peterson was very, very good.
Oh, yeah,
and it was good to see her. Fem Van Empel didn't ride. She only rode three races, and she was good in Tour of Flanders, but then she only rode three road races. It's not like she did the whole gamut of races. But it was good to see the two young cyclocrosses. Peterson obviously looked very, very good. Nivea Doma, Tour of Flanders, she just looked the same. Hopefully she can get it done in the Ardennes coming up.
Exactly. Disappointing. Tiger was indeed disappointing. She crashed on Koppenberg, but I also didn't see it as the ultimate crash either. So I don't know. I expected more from her in the Cobble Classics, but it's also, is it weird that I on one end expected more, but on the other end wasn't expecting it because we're used to her having difficulties throughout the season, partially due to injury, stuff like that, that prevents me from calling her for a top five, for example, or a victory?
I don't know. Like, it's an Olympic year, I guess, but don't really have that much data on her because she rode Omloop in 2022. That was the only road race she did. Like, do you think they'll extend her?
Ooh. Dygert extension, I don't know. I really don't know.
Who should take a risk on Dygert?
She is world champion time trial, but how much does a team get from that?
She'll win Olympic gold probably in something this year.
Yeah. I reckon, look at her 2023 season. Sorry, but that looks like extension worthy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I was disappointed, because in 2023, when she started riding in May, she was cooking. Every race, she's like top 10 almost every stage she did. And then won the World Champs TT. But then that's why I was like, oh, well, Ken Wevelhem, I was like, expecting like a Royce-style solo, not 36th or following. Maybe the Belgian Classics was positioning enough for her. But yeah, someone
the Flemish Curse.
Whether Canyon want to go through that again, don't know. But certainly some team will want to give her a contract, because she's there's not actually many riders as talented as her in Women's World Tour. But we'll see. Okay. Speaking of the classics, Tim van Dijk was relegated from his eighth position in the Paris-Roubaix bunch sprint behind the third group, came in with a big group. And on the lap before the last lap, he took a big run at them, the group of, say, 10 riders, 8 riders from behind, and dove underneath and sprinted onto the inner red segment of the velodrome, came back up and won the sprint, essentially uncontested by like a few seconds or something, because he caught them by surprise. During the junior race of Roubaix, we saw footage later that Albert Philipson entered the velodrome ahead, and then the group of chasers were all like relaying on the inner red segment, and they weren't relegated. And he ended up losing Philipson. They caught him, and like they're clearly going quicker on the inner circle.
And
so It's very, very strange.
If we then take a look at the last kilometer, even Philipsen, Albert Philipsen, also starts riding on the red segment because he probably saw the others do it and was like, let me do it too. So there's like, okay, so the elite race is first, is second. The junior race was in the morning of the elite race. So the UCI commissaire in the morning decided not to relegate or didn't notice that they rode on the red segment. The UCI commissaire in the elite race chose to relegate Tim van Dijk based on that. But first of all, let's say there is a rule that clearly says you can't ride there. Sure, then they need to be relegated. But diving into the rules, there's a UCI rule, only one UCI rule that specifically talks about this. And it says, it's rule 2.3.042, saying in case of track finishes, the whole surface of the track may be used. Then I think the UCI will come and defend themselves by saying, oh, but it's pretty obvious, right? That on a track you can't ride on that and you need to ride on that.
But I think so. I agree. I think so.
Really? I completely disagree.
The red bit is for people walking around. That is not the track, is the wooden track or the Côte d'Azur, if you're being generous. It's not
in
the
previous years, it was blocked off with barriers, with the yellow-black barriers. This year was not blocked off. For me, if it's not blocked off and it's not super obvious that it's not part of the road, which to me, it's not super obvious that it's not part of the road. Like, I rode there 2 days ago and it's very easy to think that it's part of the road if you're riding on it. So the rules say the whole surface of the track may be used. Clarify that in the rules. I think this is a UCI rule clarification issue because, yes, the track rules exist. The UCI track rules exist where I don't think you can even go on the blue part of the track in track. So it's not like those rules count.
Luke wrote on the track. Luke also said like there's track rules that if a rider's on the red line on the track, you can't come underneath them.
Yeah.
Like Philipsen did to Pollitt or Voss did. Or where
Voss to Balsamo.
Yeah. And
or the other way around.
Voss did to Pfeiffer Georgi.
Yeah.
So track rules don't apply. It's road rules. Yeah. But I agree with you. But, well, I know. When he went onto the red, I was like, you shouldn't have done that. That was my first gut feeling. Also, there was a gap, and I think he would have probably come eighth anyway without it. But then it doesn't even matter, Benji, because they didn't ping him on that rule. They relegated him based on an irregular sprint. What the fuck does that mean?
I think the reason they pinged him on irregular sprinting is because they didn't have a rule.
They looked through the rule book, like, that must have been, they're like, oh, that must be against the rules. Look through the rule book, and they're like, oh, no.
Because, like, for me, the issue is simple as this. The UCI rule that clarifies that in case of track finish, the whole surface of the track may be used needs to clarify what that means, the whole surface of the track. Because if you're a rider that never watched track, a lot of riders just go into road cycling. Like, there's a lot of road cycling fans that see this and are like, why is he relegated? Stuff like that. The rules need to be clear because now he's being relegated for something that he didn't do. Because they couldn't find a rule to relegate him for, which that's just fucking stupid, man. Like, sorry, but.
Well, also, if there's no rule to clarify.
What, sorry?
I also don't think it made too much of a difference.
I don't even care if it makes much of a difference. Yeah. It doesn't matter. But also, next to that, he wins a sprint by multiple seconds, right? He wins a sprint by multiple seconds, and he gets relegated to last of a group. But isn't he a separate group?
But that's the thing with Matthews. Matthews, I agree, should have probably been relegated, but to 12th is completely wrong in Tour of Flanders. Matthews should have been relegated to behind Pollitt.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but the others were not in the same postcode as those guys sprinting. And because there's, I don't know, the way the seconds are counted, like, I just thought also that was a bit, like, really unfair. Like, okay, you can take him from off the podium and put him behind the guys he was really sprinting against, but the other guys weren't sprinting against Matthews and Pollitt in Tour of Flanders. And same here, like a regular sprint, he's not sprinting against them. He just dove underneath. And there's, And then in the junior race, they didn't do any of them for it. So very, very strange. But then it was too late. It was like a day later, the footage came out and they're like, oh, well, whatever. Too late. What does Luke think? Luke's going to be on Tim van Dijk's side, I think.
But also, I'm not 100% certain, but then you've got this other rule that is about you can't go outside of the road to shortcut whatever. I just made it up in my own words, but there's a rule that does something like that. Yes, and the marked course in the rules is defined by if it's not clearly noticed by verges or by a larger or like a height difference, a step change, then it's still on course. Because that's why like a bike lane that is on the same road is part of the course, while a bike lane that is on a higher portion can be disqualified on. So I don't see this as a height change. It's still the same. It's just a color change.
Yeah, but how many you've watched more Roubaix than me, Benji? How many guys have dived under there in the final sprint? I've never seen it before.
In the final sprint, probably either, but in the groups behind, I've seen. And I saw some talk on Twitter that actual winners from Roubaix have done it in the past, apparently.
Really?
Gone on the red at some point, which if that's true, then this is a whole lot of discussion. But for me, it's just that the rule needs to be clear. And that's with a lot of rules by the UCI. And I think that's the issue at first. And if that rule is clear, then we wouldn't be talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, for Van Dijk, like, the team knows he did really, really well. So, like, it's a shame, of course, not to have a top 10 in a monument on your palmares. But
he'll get over it.
Yeah, I think he will, because he can do better, actually, even in the future years. But yeah, it's the Philipsen one. Because when Philipsen also came fourth, I was like, what the hell? Because I thought Philipsen would win Roubaix by 5 minutes, actually. I think he crashed. He must have crashed. I saw.
Yeah, he did.
And the two Slovenians won. The
Omerzil and Valjevec?
Yeah, is the Valjevec, his dad was a rider, no?
Yes, Tadej Valjevec. I'm making this up, or is that true? it's very far memory.
It's true.
Oh, ha, ha, ha.
It's true, yeah. His son's Ezrem. He came second.
Yep. Valjevec won the Giro in 1999, before my time.
No, not the real Giro.
Giro Ciclista d'Italia, is that not the same thing? No, it's not the same thing.
No, it might be baby Giro.
That is something else.
Yeah, he was on Fassa Bortolo and
yeah. His teams don't look like someone that has been on a Giro podium.
No. He was on at the end, he was on that toll hook trajectory, you know what I'm saying? Alrighty. I mean, he got sussied. That's what I mean.
Yeah, no shit. You didn't have to clarify it. Anyway.
Oh, on a random team. He's on some Turkish team. Alright. Update on annoying fans at RVV and Roubaix. So, the woman who you'll have seen, I don't know what sector it was, throwing a hat.
Morzon-Pavel, 42k to go.
Morzon-Pavel at Mathieu van der Poel's front wheel. This is from Head Newsblad, by the way. Apparently, she was a VIP and the business that invited her told Belgian media, i.e. Head Newsblad, that she will give herself into the authorities to be sentenced.
Sorry, I translated it, so sorry if it sounds weird.
For throwing a cap in his direction. She's supposed to be a Van der Poel fan. I don't know if she's Belgian though, so that's a bit strange, Benji. And
Van der Poel's Belgian too, remember?
That's not what he says.
he doesn't get to decide.
And so she said, so she's supposed to be a fan of his, and so it's not supposed to be on purpose. If you haven't seen the video clip, she's on the left-hand side of the road as Van der Poel's approaching, from his perspective, cap in her left hand. What's very strange about this is, like, she doesn't, if someone raises their hands up to start cheering or clapping,
yeah,
and then something in their hand slips, you know, they're half pissed in the afternoon, it happens to the best of us. But what was here is it's in one hand, and the motion is very, like, surreptitious, yeah, and just, like, flicks her hand. It's, like, not a natural motion, you know? It's not in the motion of doing something else, like going up to clap and she drops her hat. That's why it looks so suspicious.
When I saw it, I was like, this looks on purpose. I won't lie about that.
To me, it also looked on purpose.
Hey.
But maybe she just, yeah, dropped the hat. I don't know. It didn't end up
just
changing.
Fucking drunk. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, she's a Vanderpool fan, so she says. So why would she do that? But I really, to be honest, I don't think anything needs to happen. Like, it didn't cause him to crash. I think the fact that she's been like singled out, have to go to the police, explain herself. Maybe that's enough that it's being taken seriously, but I'm not sure you can prove that she meant to do it either. Like, it still isn't the clearest image of what she's doing. But or what do you think? Do you think like a message needs to be sent, Benji?
I don't know. I think I don't understand how you can solve this. Like, for example, another story is the beer tourists from RVV. One of them was apparently identified by the police and will be invited to the station. Like, what are they going to do? Are they going to, like, a pat on the fingers is the kind of vibe I'm getting to what's possible. Like, okay, don't do this again, please. This is what you're doing. Don't do that again. Next time you're going to be in trouble.
Banned from the stadium kind of for life. Getting.
Banned from the stand. Banned from the roads where you gotta stay 1 kilometer away from a cycling course at all times.
You can't go near Alicante.
1 kilometer, jail.
Yeah, you just cannot go to holiday on Spain anymore.
You got a GPS tracker on your feet and it goes off. It electrocutes you if you're 1K towards a cycling course. That's the solution.
I mean, we joke, but yeah, there's definitely like, with her, who knows? Like, yeah, it looks us. I mean, everyone that saw it, their natural reaction was it looked on purpose. But you're not going to be able to prove that. But then and maybe it wasn't, you know. And then I feel bad for her. But who knows? But the beer throw is definitely like there were people deliberately throwing beer on Van der Poel in Tour of Flanders. That's inarguable. You can see them throwing.
Roubaix too.
So, really?
One on Carrefour-Larbre.
Fair enough. Well. That, I mean, you could even go the oldest, it's assault, I guess. Check. I mean, I don't know the laws in France. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's good that, like, the police are taking it seriously. They are in Belgium, at least.
Which was the race where we had two crashes related to spectators, where a spectator was injured and then later a spectator caused another crash later on? It's like,
Tour of Flanders.
It just needs to remain and keep remaining a sensibilization campaign that you need to stay distant from the riders. You need to respect the riders. Don't throw shit at them. Let them do their sport. View them and enjoy what they do, but don't interact or hinder them. That makes sense?
You can boo. Just boo.
Just boo.
Just boo. Yeah. Like, if you went to an NBA game, that's the thing. People, I mean, I've joked up to now, but now it's, don't get complacent that this is a very special sport where you're able to be so close to the real, you know, the people fighting it out on the road with nothing between you, no barriers, inches away from them. And that's a privilege and not a right. And they're going along at 50, 60 kilometers an hour sometimes. And to be throwing things at them or hindering them or causing them to crash, like people, we can't get complacent. Like these people, maybe they would, I don't know, but these people wouldn't go to a football game and just throw a beer on a football player doing a throw-in. But actually, I mean, in football, people throw coins and stuff, so it's kind of that vibe, I guess. But yeah, I just don't want this, okay, beer on Van der Poel, yeah, he will get over it. But what next year? What if he's solo next year? Well, someone's going to tackle him. Like, it's going to escalate.
And I also feel like, it's always like a limited amount of people. We gotta accept that most of the people
on the road,
99.9% of the people by the side of the road are people that are respecting what is happening, respecting the sport. But I gotta be honest, I think the percentage of rotten apples in the VIP segment where there's drinks, where there's alcohol.
You're going after the VIPs, Benji.
I'm going after the VIPs. I think that's where the problem is.
All right. Is it... But yeah, I'm more concerned about I don't know the data on the alcohol, blood alcohol consumption or blood alcohol content between VIPs and other degenerates on the side of the road, but maybe it's higher, I don't know. Probably it is because they got beer on tap up. I am much more concerned probably from a safety perspective throughout the year of not malicious spectators, but unaware spectators. Like people taking selfies and sprints. That shit actually annoys me almost more. Not more, but like it's more pervasive. Unaware spectators to me is a much bigger problem because they are in every race and can, especially in the tour, crammed on the roads, like Omiopi, fucking hell. Like, that was crazy.
And also the kind of spectators that want to do something good, but do it in a half-assed way to the point that they're actually hurting the riders. More like we've already spoken about picking up riders that just crashed. Don't do that because they might be injured. Let them get up by themselves. Maybe put their bike up or something at max. Like that's something you could look into, but don't interrupt them as they're laying on the floor. But also next to that, I think in your Roubaix video on the Lantern Rouge channel, there was that moment where Tarling had a bike change and one of the spectators was like trying to help. Well, the team person was pushing Tarling to like, give him a lift off.
What is he doing?
Like the spectator had tried to help push, but like sideways. So he was basically almost pushing Tarling in the ground.
He didn't actually want to help. He was filming.
Yeah, he was trying to film him helping.
What are you doing? Like, that's what I always want. I mean, maybe it's a bit harsh, but... And it's the same thing when people go to concerts and put like 25 Instagram stories up of the concert with like blaring music that no one can hear. No one everyone just auto skips it. Why do people go to the race, stand there for 2 hours and then like don't face the race and then look through that? Like, isn't that quite sad? Like, I would like to watch the race. If you can see quite clear images on TV afterwards, is what I've found generally with the race. But yeah, hopefully the police make a big show of it and maybe, you know, a fine or something, particularly in the RVV beer thrower case. Maybe that sends a strong message. And certainly I would expect next year, particularly in the Flanders Classics, there'll be a concerted campaign to call on also the spectators to like cut this shit out. And if you see someone else doing it, to identify them at least.
A wall of Guardia Civil on Arc de Quaremont.
Dude, Guardia Civil do not fuck around.
It's a solution.
They got them trunk. Have you seen them on like the Mount Dog finishes in the Spanish race sometimes? Yeah. They're like fucking putting a shot on
pushing
Froome
on the ground at some point. No, in the past,
it was our French police.
I don't remember actually.
Froome said he had piss thrown on him. So like it's and the sky. It's sometimes gets a bit crazy.
To be fair, piss Dutch beer. It's all the same.
Wasn't that in RVV that beer was thrown?
I'm not going to... If I talk, I'm in trouble.
I mean, I guess, what you're saying is that RVV, like Flanders, is kind of part of the Netherlands, right?
No. We're not going there. Let's talk about the next topic. Come on, go.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In other news, we'll get all the negative news out of the way. Injuries, or some is positive, I would say. Vingegaard, I'll rattle through them. Vingegaard's collarbone surgery was successful, but he's still in hospital. Vingegaard and Van Aert, Zayman says Tour and Giro still no decision. Certainly for Vingegaard, like who knows? He's actually quite a while away. Jay Vine, who almost took the worst of it in terms of injuries, apart from maybe Kras in that terrible Basque Country crash, he doesn't require surgery. But he's not home yet. So like these guys, happened like a week ago. They're still like in fucking hospital, man. Remco, at least I saw from Umi's Instagram photos, was in hospital, had surgery like yesterday or the day before. I don't know if he's gone home. But Remco was the shoulder blade and collarbone. Whereas Vine and Vingegaard seem to be either internal injuries or is their back. In the case of Vine, Lander also broke two ribs in addition to the collarbone. So it just goes to show the speed and impact of those crashes, yeah. Benji, because they weren't just collarbones. There was actually some other stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's not much more to say. But we won't be seeing these guys racing in the next 2-3 weeks, let alone maybe not for another 2 months. Who knows?
Exactly. And lastly, I think the update was Primoz Roglic is unsure about the Ardennes, so we'll see whether he rides
there
or not.
He's on the trainer. Bora posted him on the trainer today. So that's
great. Trainer, first 90% of the flesh will on. Both the same, right?
When is flesh? That's next Wednesday. That's in 8 days. And Liège is in 11 days. He had two hard crashes in a row, 2 days in a row. So he would have been feeling fucked. He put that photo up of his... He wanted to one up his naked photo in last year in the Vuelta, and he did another naked photo. And he's just got road rash everywhere, like covered in that stuff. It'd take an hour to do those dressings every day. But yeah, it's to be honest, it's good that at least Vine doesn't require surgery because I had a burst fracture, 50% height loss of my T12 when I crashed off a bridge and then hit a concrete embankment myself. That's actually when I saw the Basque Country crash, I was like, when I saw the concrete embankment, I was like, this is no good.
Jesus.
Obviously, I turned it off because you hit a concrete thing like that, you'll fuck your whole body up at 60 kilometers an hour. So it's good that at least Jay didn't require surgery. But yeah, I got, if people don't know, three levels fixated with, I got percutaneous insertion of screws, and then I got rods that stabilized those levels because it was like an unstable displaced burst fracture. But no neurological damage except the obvious brain problems that I already haven't lived with, Benji.
mate, I'll be honest, when you said height loss, I was going to make a joke, but
I lost a centimeter height because of the crash, because my spine got fucked up, and I was like, I didn't have a centimeter to give back. I was trying to make the most of what God gave me, and I had to lose another centimeter. Come on.
But is that kind of injury a shortcut to weighing less on climbs? Because if you're smaller.
No, I got titanium in my back.
I was just thinking, man. Come on.
And also, when I was really skinny, it's actually very uncomfortable. Like, it rubs up against the seat.
Yeah. But
that's my excuse for not getting too skinny. okay, well, that's my injury news, if people didn't know that. But yeah, I made a full recovery. So hopefully, and these guys got the best doctors, best support, and the best ambition. They're young, they're fit, they're healthy. I really, really hope they will make a full recovery. Can't wait to see them back in action shortly. And so I don't know on Steph Kras. Hopefully Steph Kras is also okay. Anyway, on more positive news, transfer rumors. This one's a bit stronger than a rumor though, Benji. This was from RMC Sport, which is a French sports publication. They cover cycling pretty intensively. Like, they don't just moonlight us covering cycling. They basically, there's already a rumor that Lenny Martinez would go to Bahrain. This is like confirmation from them, and they also have a number. So I'm inclined to believe it. 3-year deal beginning 2025. Signed the contract at the start of this year, and the contract is for $2.5 million across the 3 years.
So 800K roughly per year.
Yeah, although the Veloflitz article says 2.5 with a fee of 3 seasons with a fee of 2.5.
Oh.
So that could be interpreted as a 2.5 a year.
I don't think he's going to be on 2.5 a year. Sorry, but I know rides are getting more and more expensive, but it's still like, I don't know. Lenny Martinez has been proving himself as a climber. He's been showing promise in that sense. But to call him like a... Where do you see his potential compared to Pete Godu?
Oh, well, God, who came fourth in the Tour de France. I don't really know. I mean, he's more progressed and advanced than Godu was at this age. Like, Lenny is very, very young. But
everyone is that comes through now that is super talented.
He's
the,
20,
the training at young age has increased so significantly that I don't think we can compare that to the days where Godu came through the Kiddo Square.
Kiddo Square.
I don't know where that came from, but it's now a term.
I mean, yeah, Godu won Tour de l'Avenir in 2016. He was 19 years old at the time, I think. If I can count properly. So and he beat Bernal, Hindley, Gegenhardt. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't underrate how talented and how highly hyped David Godu was. Like he was coming fifth in the men's races in Tour de l'Ain in GC. Before that, he won Course de la Paix U23 ahead of Gegenhardt, ahead of Lambrecht. So he really was probably higher hyped than. And Lenny, but again, that was when he was 19 years old. And Lenny, actually, fuck, Godu was really good.
Yeah.
He gained ninth in his Neopro year in flesh.
But I interpret this article as him earning around 800K per year.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Also because they mention he will earn four times as much as he did at Groupama, which I don't think that's going to have been 2.5 million divided by four. So I'm looking at 800K per year when I look at this. And I'm thinking through this and I'm like, okay, Bahrain lost Landa. They've got a younger climber coming in that, I don't know, is it weird that I would see Martinez as potentially growing to a Landa type GC rider? But French?
Yeah, I mean, Lenny's a huge talent. And honestly, an RMC Sport, they got that 800K a year or 33K a year over the 3 years. They got that from the Gazzetta dello Sport March article. So they were repeating that, so it might not be that figure, but I was honestly shocked by that figure. I was shocked that after Pinot retires, Damar, I reckon they saved at least 600K last year based on he went early. Maybe even more. If he was on 1.5 mil, more than 1.5 mil, then if he was on 2 mil, they would have saved maybe 750K, 800K based on forecasted budget because they didn't have to pay Damar for the last 5-6 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
To let Martinez walk, Pithy's gone. Okay, but he's not French. He's going to Bora according to the rumors. Okay, but he's not French. Fair enough. Probably Bora gave him crazy money. Who knows? But Martinez, French. They got money. He's the G out of the three, Gregoire, Pithy, Martinez. He's the GC one, in theory. And 800K, they couldn't match. That's the going rate.
Is that the going rate or is that less than the
crazy,
going rate?
That's not a crazy salary.
Exactly, because like if you look at those French riders that do perform, like Victor
he's
Lafay,
winning races.
Won a Tour de France stage last year. We're looking at him as a comparison, and they were talking about 1 to 1.5 million in the discussions that we heard last year, and then we look at this year and we look at Lenny Martinez and 800K, then for me that's a clear example of paying someone based on their palmarès and not on their potential.
Yeah, like he won La Guelia. He destroyed. He didn't ride very smart, but you know, whatever. Second in Camino behind Jonas. Seventh in Catalunya, but it's not even about that. Like his Neo Pro year on Loport, he did nuclear watts. To come sixth behind Roglic and Evenepoel, like not that far behind. So like, this guy can win KOM jersey. I mean, 800K for a guy that would be the favorite if you targeted the KOM jersey in the Tour. And he's French. It's already a bargain. Forget the GC. So I'm really, really surprised. Now, according to the RMC article, and now to play advocate of the devil for Groupama FDJ, do you have to accept that there are tax differences between the, and this also goes to the budget cap discussion, Benji, tax differences between the different teams and the French teams, for example. So if he moved to Andorra, Lenny, First of all, I don't even know as a French citizen employed by a French team. I don't exactly know how that would work. I know how it works for non-French riders employed by a French team, but at a minimum, every day he trains in France, is at a team camp in France, and races in France, and bonuses earned in French races, taxed in under French, so taxed probably 45%. Mm-hmm. But if he rides for Bahrain and doesn't race in, I don't even know what happens if you're French and you get the bonuses in France and you're not employed by, and you're employed by, you know, a Bahraini team. But Bahrain, it says he's moving to Andorra, then the tax delta could be like 35%, 10% versus 45%. I don't know what the French top marginal rate is. So that would mean in theory, I mean, let me do some back of the napkin math, 800 times. Yeah, like FDJ would have to pay him over $1 million to match the after-tax income, maybe even more when you factor in bonuses, maybe 1.1, 1.2. So maybe there's that, Benji, that it's also the tax structure that really, and the pension contributions and all that. Just to, that context is important.
That will impact it. That context is important, but still, you see in the past, Coffett has been paying loads of money for Viviani, then Lafay being highly paid, then all that kind of stuff. I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, I'd rather have someone like Lenny Martinez that I'd sign for the team.
Godu got a big extension.
Is it because Bahrain is so early in doing it? And, for example, Decathlon just spent a lot of money last year?
I think
that they're not talking about that yet?
I think, yeah, if you see where it's going and you act quickly, like FDJ will be like, how can you pay $1 million for a rider that hasn't won shit?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they're thinking. Indeed, Carlos Rodriguez, Benji, the rumor was that he got a contract offer. Like Ineos must have given him a contract offer.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a joke. And then he's like, are you serious? And then signed a pre-contract at Movistar.
Yep.
But like, yeah, it's like past performance versus future performance type thinking. But I was
pay for future performance.
I thought Lenny was gonna be being paid over $1.5-2 million at Bahrain. Because 800K, I was like, unless FDJ are fully broke, how do you not pay your French GC prospect from your dev team with Pithy walking, according to the rumors?
Mm-hmm.
How do you not pay him a mil? So budget constraints could be bad.
I expected 1.2 to 1.5 million. 1.5 to 2 is maybe a lot. Like,
but
even
that,
with.
Yeah.
Because his TT is not godlike either, eh? He's had one good TT, I think, or.
No, his TT is not good. He can't ride. He's 55 kilos. Like, he can't ride on the flat. That's why I say KOM and a mountain break, he's a killer. Yeah. Because he actually is very punchy.
He is Godu.
Descends well.
Like mini Godu.
Yeah, yeah. I like Martin.
Kinda.
But winning the Tour de France, maybe Groupama FDJ Benji thought, actually, we looked at the data and we don't think this guy can win the Tour de France, so we're not going to give him seven figures. I don't know. But that little, yeah, it's a shame. I mean, if FDJ lose Pithy, Gregoire, and Martinez for nothing after the Neopro mm-hmm. contracts, I actually will feel really sorry for them. Because you can't say they haven't done a good job developing them. Okay, I know that mm-hmm. maybe no team is perfect. I've done this in the past, you know, saying the French teams, maybe they're not as professional in certain aspects. I don't think that's true in the current environment. I think Groupama, FDJ do a lot of things right. And for their budget, they score a lot of points and perform very well. Decathlon are performing very well. Cofidis, okay. Things don't seem, but they also have no budget. So Groupama FTJ are not just they're not just like clueless clowns walking around.
I want to divert us to a different discussion on the other side of the spectrum, as in Bahrain taking in a rider like this man Lenny Martinez,
true, we didn't do it from their perspective.
Landa leaving. From their perspective, I'm looking at like at replacing what Landa had for them in the past, which is consistent GC results together with Bilbao's consistent GC results, together with Butrago's consistent GC results, but that does feel like stagnation for me. We know their budget is not huge, but it's not like they're going to move up and win Grand Tours as a consequence of this transfer. It's like, it's just going to be consistent GC results again in my head.
Yeah. It's, I mean, Bahrain are a great climbing team. They really get guys climbing really, really well. Like, while Paul's unbelievable performance, winning Tour Stages of Vuelta and Angliru last year, Tiberi's climbing really, really well, Landa climb well. Like, Bahrain as a GC team in World Tour races, really good. I think Bahrain are a top five GC team in terms of approaching Grand Tours, etc. So I think they're kind of happy, Bahrain, Benji, with like middle, you know, top fives in GC. I think they're kind of happy with that. And maybe a stage raid here or there. Like, they extended Santi. But there'll be space for him to grow there as well. But we'll see. I mean, maybe it's just a rumor, but it does look pretty much like it seems pretty well sourced. On to previewing the Ardennes Classics. Tomorrow is Brabantse Pijl, which is like the bridge between the two. It is. Yeah. It's been won by Cosnefroy when they gave it to him over. No, Kwiatkowski or Cosnefroy? Who got it in the end?
Kwiatkowski got it because Cosnefroy didn't wear an aero
helmet or aero suit.
Aero suit.
It's a. Oh, was that Amstel? Fuck, I can't remember.
That was Amstel. Yes,
that was Amstel. Jesus,
Cosnefroy did win Brabantse Pijl ahead of Alaphilippe 2 years ago.
I swear Cosnefroy's done well in this race before.
Year, he also gets second. I don't know anymore.
There's Van Aert, Pidcock beat Van Aert in a sprint here. Anyway.
2021, no? Let me check. Brabantse Pijl.
It starts in Leuven. Leuven when there was the Van Torenhout Masterclass in 21 and finishes in Overijse. It is a hilly but not as difficult as Amstel Gold Race. Shorter hills, the Moskestraat is the main cobbled climb where we actually saw Pidcock getting dropped, but then he was much stronger on like the Hostader, which is a tarmac climb, and Moskestraat is quite steep. It's 9% average for 500 meters. With some steeper pinches in there. And there's an uphill through the, what's it called? The S-Bocht. This race I always know from the S-Bocht. And it's like from the helicopter shot through a village, S-Bend, and it's uphill drag.
It's a giant chicane.
They got to install one of these before the Tour d'Arenberg. on the start list, Dorian Godon. That motherfucker won this last year. That's who won it last year. I forgot. He's actually improved a lot. Godon, Cosnefroy, De Bont, De Pestel, Noah Isidore. Just write him in a little black book. See a little black book. Write down this guy's name. 19 on Decathlon Dev Team. They've brought him up for this race. He is a real serious guy. Anyway, they got a really good team for this Decathlon. Quinton Hermans looked in good shape at Alpecin. No Magnier, Benji, for Quickstep.
Correct.
Bit surprising. Buratti for Bahrain, Albanese for Arkea, Ben Hermans, no Healy, but there is Mikel Honoré.
Why the hell did you single out Buratti for Bahrain?
That team's, isn't he their guy here?
I don't know who's their guy, but sorry, but it's results this year, don't shout. Like, we shouldn't even mention their team then.
I gotta be honest, I'll put my hand up. I thought he was Francesco Bussato on Intermarché. Who's actually good in one-day races. Because Bussato is actually, if you write him down in your black book too, he's actually a good rider. Came fifth in Muscat Classic, which is a hilly race. But yeah, I actually thought he was him. He's not. So Darren Rafferty, look out for an EF. I'm surprised that Ryan is not here. It could be a good race for Archie Ryan. Velens, Hirschi, Morgado, Pollitt is a pretty ridiculous team for UAE. Turns also was cooking. Coleman Strong, Stephen Williams, but Israel is a very, very nice team. And Joseph Blackmore, who, if Israel probably wanted to give him a World Tour contract pretty shortly, because he won the Circuit des Ardennes ahead of Timon Hrat and Matthias Brejnoj, who are like good prospects. One Tour de Taiwan, one Tour de Rwanda, won three GC races on the, two of them are professional races, by the way, Taiwan and Rwanda, albeit not in Europe. And his points don't count for Israel so far, and they won't count if he does well tomorrow because he's on the Conti team. So I would suggest they should bump this guy up sharpish.
Yeah.
But yeah, look out for him. Who else am I looking for? Total Energy, Tergis, Tudor with Camp, always does well in Brabant and Amstel, the Dane. Johannesson? Anyone else you like? Who's at Lotto, Benji?
Well, Johannesson for UNOX, Lotto. I wish they would have sent Maxim Van Hels here because he could compete for the victory here, but Andreas Kroon had his concussion, if I recall, early season, and then he got back in Catalonia, but he's not looking like he's vibing yet, so whether he would do well there, I don't know what his level is going to be like. You know, Berkmus, I'm a Berkmus fan. Honestly, I'm a Berkmus fan. He was great at RVV, relatively.
So he won a sprint of a small group in Settimana ahead of Naruka and De Preto.
But I also am feeling, when it comes to this race, I'm feeling the kind of race where I see Wellens, Hirschi, Turns, the names you mentioned.
Yeah, Cosnefroid,
I really expect to be good this year. I expect Cosnefroid to compete for the victory here. By the way, 2020 was the year where he got third in Brabant-Sappel, losing a sprint against Alaphilippe, who won a sprint against Van der Poel that year. So those were the days. But also, Axel
looks a bit better this year.
Who? Sorry?
Cosnefroid looks like his sprint looks really good this year. He's won two sprints.
Yeah. I just expect those riders just fighting against each other. And with this race, it's also like, you said it when it comes to the parkour, it's kind of lappy, right?
So, yeah. They just do laps at Moskestraat.
So you don't necessarily know on which Moskestraat they're going to go from the finish line, which also makes it so that you might see an outsider going first and then another rider reacting on the next one. And I kind of like the vibe of that. So I am expecting
a good race. Yeah.
And my winner is going to be... on one end, I want to say Dylan Turns, but I think he's going to win Flesh. So I'm going to say Benoit Cosnefroid.
I mean, Michael Matthews, this looks like a good race for him. He was in good shape at RVV, so I'd like to see how Bling goes. Not the strongest team. Like, there's no De Preto here for Jayco or that sort of rider. It is, as you say, Benji, maybe not the strongest stylist, and Ineos indeed aren't doing this race. Neither Ineos nor Visma are doing the race. I don't know why, particularly for someone like August. It'd be quite a nice... And Ineos have used this as a development race. Sheffield won this. Very strongly in 2022, I think. And that was when Turner, Pidcock and Sheff worked over Remco. And that was when Blyth called Remco the little brat, right?
Mate, you forgot the detail where, what was it? Was it Wellens that didn't take over or something and then Sheffield just rode off from the group gradually? Yeah. Was that the one?
Yeah, he didn't even realize he was attacking. Just 400 watts. So they're not here, but that opens up other opportunities. Cofidis only have 5 riders starting and no Zangler, who top 5 this last year. So I don't know if he's injured or what, but I don't know what's going on with Cofidis, to be honest. I think there's trouble there. Then we have Amstel on Sunday, which is a harder Ardennes race and also 60 kilometers longer and with a much stronger start list, obviously. What?
Sorry for making very weird animal noises, but is this the first pro race for Vlad van Mechelen?
I don't know.
On Sunweb? No, Sunweb. DSM, sorry. Jesus Christ. I just went back 2 years in time. But,
he did Volta NXT Classic.
Like Dot Pro Race, I mean.
Oh.
Is it?
He did Brussels Cycling Classic.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind then. Pull it aside. Back to Amstel.
I don't know if it's Noah Isidore's first big race. The French guy on Decathlon, maybe. But the Amstel Gold Race, why do you think Van Mechelen will do well?
I don't know.
People might him in their black book.
Might be a bit too hard for now. Not yet. Vlad the Impaler is not ready yet.
253Ks, the Amstel Parkour from Maastricht to Bergen to Blaet. Luke, I heard the rumor is that people were trying to stop the race happening, but Luke personally went to Maastricht and fought the city councillors to keep the race on. That's what I heard. Very, very hilly with the loads of climbs with Berg in them, Blätterberg, Hoppeberg, Karlberg, which you'll know well, Bemelerberg. But yeah, the most famous climb is obviously the Karlberg, which this race no longer finishes on. It used to, does it finish on the Karlberg? No. It used to when like Phil Gill won this a million times. Very, very hilly. Last year, Poggi was solo after attacking with a group with like 80Ks to go. They cooperated with him. And then then Ben Healy broke away and dropped Pidcock. And this is also where Kroon and Van Hills sort of broke out too. The two Lotto guys for the Ardennes. And Healy was chasing Pidcock. And the organizer said, we cannot have Ben Healy win this race. And so he put the car in front of Poggi. not that it would have made any difference, but yeah, that was a bit ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, and especially the words of the organizers afterwards. I actually completely forgot what his name is, but he said that Leo van Vliet. He said afterwards,
"The car in front doesn't change anything."
Yeah, I was a rider back in the day. The aerodynamics, this doesn't make a difference. Sorry, but that's fucking bullshit.
Okay, you watching Tour of Flanders when there's a guy on the left side of the road trying to come back, and then remember a car comes past with a rider on the bumper, like it's twice the speed, then you tell me it doesn't make a difference. But yeah, Poggi was the strongest anyway, and he won last year and he's back, but also it was the breakout of Healy. So it's those two are back. The UAE team, Poggi's not doing this race. Is he?
No, not on the list, at least. I think he's returning Liège. At Liège.
Okay, well, he's not doing this race, sorry. Gregoire, Madouaz and co for Groupama, Almeida, Ayuso, Hirschi, McNulty for UAE, Healy, of course, for EF. Ineos will be Pidcock, Kwiatkowski again. That's been a very, very successful combination in this race. And Van der Poel will probably start the big favorite, as we mentioned at the top of the show. Yep. Skelmos is in good shape, evidently, for Little Trek. And how do you think this race will go, Benji? Who do you think? Yeah, I don't know. Like, if you told me which team will control the breakaways, for example, I don't really have the answer.
On one end, you'd say Alpecin, because Van der Poel is the favorite going into this, but,
yeah. But he'll say Philipsen. He's not.
They have Philipsen in the team as well. Belgium Media was also mentioning him as being on the start list.
Sorry, so if you can't get around Kerner, you're not getting around here. Sorry.
I agree. I don't think this parkour will work for Philipsen. I think this is too hard for Philipsen. So I don't know. I don't really know why he's at the start of this race. I would have rather have seen him on like,
Brabantje-Pale almost. But even probably, that's too hard, I think.
Probably not either, but like, anyway. Yeah. That discussion aside, I think Alpecin probably will be one of the teams. But also, like, there's so many outsiders in this race that Van der Poel won in 2019 in one of the craziest way. That final is still one of the best finals of cycling races I've seen in my life. But the problem is, how repetitive is that? To the point that he's so favored. Yes, he has a solid team. Kurt Andersen's great. Hedemans is great. But there's so many outsiders here. Like, it's different from Roubaix. And the outsiders are closer to him than the outsiders in Roubaix were. So,
like turns.
I kind of low-key see them having trouble controlling all the crazy moves unless other teams do it for him, which sometimes happens too.
I'm going to go with Tom Schoen's winning. I don't know if he's carrying shape, but he damn well looked good on these sort of tarmac climbs in on the Berendries in Omloop. A month and a half ago. I don't know what shape Jorgensen will be. He skipped Roubaix. Benoit will probably be leading Visma. That's the provisional, but they only got four riders on the provisional, and Van Baal was too sick to do Roubaix, so I don't really know exactly who's going. Decathlon have announced their team. My dark horse is Pierre Gotera. I think these races suit him more. I think he was really good on the steep climbs and the harder ones in the classics, but he is a small boy. He's not that big. And so I think really the tarmac ones here should suit him better in theory. So I really will be watching Gotera closely, as well as Matthew Dinham. He hasn't raced. He's on the provisional, not confirmed, for on PCS for DSM, but he came 7th in World Champs on that punchy course. Like, Denham should be good here. But as I said, it's I think he must have been injured. I'm hopeful, Benji. The Ardennes are better than the Cobble Classics.
Yeah, I'm also curious to like the outsiders, like Vaucelin, for example, Maxim Van Hills, those riders that have been doing well this season. But Amstel's kind of a step up towards the races where they did well to the point that I believe they can top 10, maybe in an Alexander Kamp wave years ago, and be in that top 10. But they're also the kind of riders where Maxim Van Hills in a group with most riders is probably, he's got a punch. He's relatively fast, but he's not super fast either. He's not going to beat Van der Poel in a sprint, is what I'm saying. Vaucelin, same story, but he also has a bit of a kick. It's like, I don't know. The chance of someone in the group having a better sprint than him is existent, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Laurence, I'm curious, because like we're talking about Van der Poel, but Laurence can also do well on a parcours like Amstel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Pidcock, I'm expecting to be good. He was good at LBL. Roubaix, sorry, I'm already talking about the future. He's going to be good at LBL. I'm curious to see whether Mohoric has returned from his injuries, from RVV. Grégoire, I like for this parkour as well, to be honest. Because, like,
we're looking for that step up for Grégoire, right? Like, the super talent.
A lot
talent
of riders. How about the start list?
Yeah, a lot of them. Even Scarlini.
Sharkman, top 10.
Sharkman looks so good in Basque Country, and he struggled more on the longer climbs. Yeah, Sharkman looks in great shape. Or Tobias Halland Johannesson. I am surprised if Arkea don't send Owen Costiu, which he's on the provisional. I would definitely send him. But yeah, there's just a lot of riders who are looking for that step up. In the end, we might just have a Van der Poel beatdown. Hopefully not. But I really hope these are more open races. Certainly, if Poggi was here with Van der Poel, I would really just see the two of them riding away, and then they would figure it out. I can't wait to watch the race. FDJ is sending a super squad.
I expect Scaroni to be good.
He should be, yeah. Scaroni's good. They sent him to they didn't send him to Strade, which was strange. But Scaroni is good.
Ayuso on paper should be good for this parkour too, but then last year he was a bit meh, if I recall correctly. He DNF'd or something, or 2 years ago when he did Amstel?
Yeah, on the punchy climbs, I'm not sure he's like on La Guelia, he wasn't so dominant, actually. In fact, Jan Christen was really, really good there for UAE, but he's at Abruzzo.
Yeah, but that felt like failed tactics more than lack of quality to me.
True, he like bridged across the break in the end. No Roglic, we didn't. Yeah, Sharkman. Okay, I can't wait to watch Amstel. I think hopefully it'll be really, really good. And then we have Flesch and Liège the week after. We'll have a weekly show next Monday or Tuesday. So unless there's been any, I know it's been a long episode, but this is supposed to tie you over for the week. Unless there's any other news that's dropped while we've been recording this, Benji, I think that's all from us today.
Yep, exactly. How do we cover Brabant? Is that towards the end of the week, or do we do something tomorrow, or how do we see that?
I reckon you could twist my arm to do a pod recap tomorrow.
Depends on the race.
Yeah, I'll be watching. I'll be watching, that's for sure. I've got nothing better to do.
We spoke about men's Amstel Gold Race, women's Amstel Gold Race. I've got this feeling about... we spoke about men's Amstel Gold Race, men's Brabant-Sappel. Women's Amstel Gold Race? I'm just hoping that we see Nivea Doma versus Vollering. I don't know if Ludwig will be back yet, because her injury from Omloop is still kicking on, and... I expect Vollering to dominate these races again.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, even if you look at the start list for Brabant this week, okay, unless Faulkner goes on a long ranger for EF, like, or at least Longo Borghini's unbelievably good, no one can touch Vollering on this course. Like, it's her, no Kopecky. Heritza, Unikam, Vash, Cicchini, Bredeval is a really strong team.
It's an okay team. They're missing Roycer in these races 100%, and I think that's going to have an effect, but I do expect Vollering to be strong.
Even Fisher Black's pretty solid, but yeah, they are missing a big engine. Los Arjes, Shiwan, Cadells, and the last year, but yeah, Vollering has to be the number one five-star favorite for me. And with no Nivea Doma also tomorrow at the, this week at Brabants. Maybe someone like Yara Kastelein or Royak is on Finch to Koenig. Yeah, Van Anroy step up. Maybe Vollering's not as good. She certainly in RVV wasn't like dominant, but
it's like,
yeah,
Longoborgini is rumored to ride Brabants Amstel Flesh Liège, which
she's
then,
confirmed for Brabants.
Well, we're looking at, and maybe that's the reason she skipped Roubaix, because she's like, oh, can't be doing endless race days.
True, but yeah, Amstel is a bit different. I think Amstel. Although that's when maybe Capecchi comes back in. I don't know if she's doing it. So then there'll be Nividoma. Then there'll be Ludwig. Then there's maybe a Sus Gigante a bit more.
LBL even this year, if I recall correctly. So Capecchi might replace that missing rider that Reusser was.
Yeah. But the Amstel, we don't really have the start lists for the women's at least clearly ironed out. But
yeah.
It will be a stronger start list than Brabants, and hopefully Ludwig is back, because her Brown, Amber Kraak, Loos Aargeest, and Gladys Verhulst is actually a really strong attacking team in Amstel, and hopefully Dyke is doing it as well for Canyon, and they can attack and be aggressive with her. But yeah, have you got anything else, Benji?
One outsider each of the start lists. My name to give is, I think Olivia Baril will do well at the Hill Classic.
Okay, Ben Van Empel doesn't count. She's like a cyclocross. She's cyclocross world champion.
I'll accept it.
Nah, I think that's cheeky. I don't know how Schwein. I'm gonna go. I'm not gonna go Schweinberger again. I think I proved myself already with that. I'm gonna go with Amber Kraak.
Isn't the Belgian rider that did well at Brabant-Sappel last year that was in the group with Vollering and so forth, Margot van Pachtebeek, who's now riding for Volker Wessels? I'm curious whether she can show that again this year, because she got 11th at Gent Wevelgem for that team, and that's a strong result for that team. So I'm looking at Brabant-Sappel, whether she can get a result there as well. So I just want to see who steps up to the top 10 where we didn't expect it kind of vibes in these races, and that's what I'm most looking forward to.
Anna Kiesenhofer as well. Apparently she's doing Amstel. So
yeah, but
Roland.
You keep naming her ever since the Olympics, but...
No, I never have.
You have? That was
again,
the biggest fucking voice
Pick
crack I've done in my life.
All right, you've asked me to name some outsiders, so I named 10. But yeah, I like Amber Kraak to try something. Well, FDJ Suez, and certainly they're a very, very attacking team, which is great to see. So hope you enjoyed this weekly show. We'll see you probably with a recap of Brabants tomorrow. No promises, but we probably will if you twist our arm. Thanks for joining for sponsoring the episode. See you then.